All right, everybody, this is the fifth episode of Race to the Finish, and I'm here with Amy Kato. So I asked her to come in, you know, just because she is flying out to Malaysia. You know, we just graduated, so I wanted to make sure that she came on to the podcast. She actually reminded me, so like, it's just a lot going on. But go ahead and tell us about yourself.
So I'm an international student. I am a sociology and criminology graduate now.
Nice.
Feels good saying that.
Yeah.
And I'm an activist. I have been an activist on campus. Yes.
Yeah, because I feel like, I mean, you've done so much here, you know, and you were justly like recognized for it. I mean, like I saw like, I guess someone's coming in yesterday, right? And obviously it's different for the listeners, you know, because this will be out next week. But like, day after graduation, just for context. But like, your poster was up there and stuff. So like the Legacy Award, like what is that? So, like I never really knew what that was.
So the Leadership Legacy Award is given by the Leadership Legacy Committee.
Yeah.
I don't know who they are.
Uh-huh.
But it's to recognize students on campus who have shown like significant leadership activities that have contributed to changing the campus culture.
Yeah.
Or building up on the campus culture.
Okay, cool. Yeah. What are some stuff that you've done?
So
of course I know, but like, you know.
Yeah. So I do a lot of programming on campus. I've worked with different cultural organizations. Mm-hmm. And I also am a senator on the Soon Union the past year. I somehow became the class president. Don't know how that happened. A lot of people just shifted positions.
Yeah.
And I was the chair of the Diversity and Inclusion Advocacy Committee while sitting on the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion University Committee working on the strategic plan just process.
So you ended up becoming the class president?
Yeah.
What? How come I never knew this? Like,
yeah, I was a senior class president.
Right.
It was just...
Because wasn't it...
It was Nick Baker.
It was Nick... Yeah, because it was Ben Goodman, then Nick Baker, and then what happened?
Like, so basically, Nick Baker was the... Student Union president. Well, our class president.
Yeah.
Class of 18 president. And then he became the vice president of the Student Union.
Mm-hmm.
And so the next person in seniority, like there, during the voting time, there were three people or two people who got more votes than me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one or two of them dropped out.
Oh.
And so... I just became
just
succession.
Just kinda happened. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, with obviously, like, all the work you've done here, you know, because you've done a ton with CSDI, you know, that's where I've seen you the most, the Center for Student Diversity and Inclusion. But, like, I guess what would you say was most fulfilling, you know? Actually, you know what? I don't even want to start there. I just kind of want to start, like, because we didn't come in at the same time, right?
No.
You came in the
One
class
year
afterwards.
After.
Yeah. And so, like, did you always come in so fired up about, like, social activism and stuff like that, or...?
So actually, in high school, I wasn't involved at all.
Uh-huh.
And I realized when I was graduating, you know, what... I guess the way Salo would have put it was, what legacy do you leave behind?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized, you know, what's my legacy at John Carroll going to be? What do I want it to be? And I said that I want to be as involved as possible.
Right.
And I want to do something for my campus because... my campus has done so much for me. And I was very grateful to be able to come here. And so I decided, you know, let me join as many organizations as possible.
Yeah.
Let me go to as many events as I can.
Yeah.
Because, number one, we're already paying for it.
Right.
But the other thing is that it's...
That activity
it's,
fee.
Yeah, yeah. But it's also amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the speakers that come, the performances, the activities that are held around campus.
Yeah.
For me, it was such, how do I call it? Like a new chance, you know?
Yeah.
A fresh sheet of paper.
Yeah. Like a fresh start, almost.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, like, a good start for you to actually, like, start getting involved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, when was that moment that you became, like, that leader everyone knows you to be? Like, the person that, like, the go-to to talk about, like, any social issue out the book? You know, because, I mean, just talking, you know, outside of, you know, this moment right now, just talking to you out on campus, like, if something happens, like, you're the first one to know about, like, number one, why it could be potentially wrong and why something may be happening. Like, when did you first know that you have that type of platform and that influence here?
I didn't.
You did? Okay.
So, for me, when I was in African Dunia, like, I really learned how to troubleshoot. And African Dunia is the African Cultural Organization here on campus. And I realized, you know, wow, like, these issues, I've known about them, you know. In, at my home, we watch the news every morning, and I kind of understand them.
Your home being in Malaysia?
Yes.
Okay.
But in my house particularly. But at the same time, I realized that there's so many other issues, like, in the world going on. And I thought, you know, why don't I just read up more about them? And I didn't go reading books and, like, a lot of things. I just read articles online. I would, whenever I saw something I didn't understand, I would make a point to actually read up on it. And it was really great because I would just read and talk to my professors about them, talk to my peers, my seniors about them.
Right.
And it really was the only way that, like, that led to me, like, if knowing
things,
all of this.
Yeah, like, things are essentially, like, actively going around you, you know? Like, and then trying to dig deeper and find out more about that.
Like, I don't think that if you, I think that if you want to know something, if you want to learn about something, there's so many resources available. And for me, I didn't wait for someone to tell me, hey, you know, you should read up on this. And a lot of people did, and I'm very grateful for that. But in addition to people telling me, I did my own work as well. Because I wasn't going to wait for someone to tell me, hey, you can do this. You know, because I don't have time for that. You know, I'm here for, all I thought was, okay, I'm here for 4 years. You know, let me do as much as possible. Let me learn as much as possible. I paid attention in Dr. Vaquera's Soch 101 class.
Right.
That helped so much.
She's a great teacher.
She is. Yeah. She's amazing.
I got a C in her class. Because I decided not to buy the book for the half the semester.
Oh, my gosh. Nope.
And, yeah, I remember she called me to the office. She's like, why are you, why do you suck at your test? I'm like, I don't have a book. She's like, why didn't you just ask me? I have a book here that you can borrow. But your relationship with Dr. Vaquera, like, I mean, it's very, like, out there, you know? Like, it's like mentor-mentee type of thing. You know, like, like, talk about that a little bit, I guess. Like, what was that like? Like, what did she do for you here at John Carroll?
She was my first year advisor when I first came in. And I had registered as a sociology and criminology major. And for some reason, I thought, you know what, I might go to poli sci or psych. But then I took her class and I absolutely loved it.
For sure.
Yeah. And she was an excellent advisor. She gave me a space to not worry about being judged for not knowing American things. Because even though Malaysia is globalized, we have so much American media. Honestly, the transition wasn't super difficult, but it was, in a way, like, culturally challenging.
Right.
Because they're, like, nuances, you know. It's the small things that really affect you. I didn't understand the perception of poverty here. I didn't understand a lot of the things that, like, they pull you up. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're failing because of yourself, not because of societal factors. And sometimes that's true, but not all of the time. And when I talk to her about it, like, she is an activist as well. And
for sure.
Right. She doesn't keep quiet about issues, like, injustices she sees.
Right.
And, you know, I caught on to that. I latched onto that. And I was like, you know, teach me your ways.
Yes. Yeah. I remember when I first came into Carroll, you know, she kind of gave me that similar, how you can say, first impression, because she actually knew my godfather. My godfather is a priest on the west side of Cleveland, and she goes to his church. And so I wasn't, like, all that serious to come into Carroll. Like, I was basically, I had a friend. You remember Gabby Urin?
Yeah,
her.
Oh,
so
she's amazing.
Yeah, we met in El Salvador, and because she went down with my godfather to El Salvador, and I ended up falling for this girl that was down there, and she, like, we had, like, she was it was a thing, but, like, I was also a junior in high school, so, like,
Carlos,
it was, like, the whole, like, love at first sight thing. So anyways, Gabby, the point in all that thing.
Oh my god! Yeah,
right. It's bullshit, but, like, it does. Anyways, Gabby kind of capitalized on that. Oh, she was just like, by the way, you know, John Carroll goes to El Salvador, right? And I'm like, oh, I have to go there. It's like, I'm in the midst of making this my decision of what I'm going to do for the next 4 years,
right?
Or five in this case. But Yeah, so like once I became, once that was over and I became serious, my godfather met Gloria. Gloria's like coming to do Project K.
Yeah.
You know, what Project K is? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so for the listeners, basically it was a biology program. Well, it was put on by the sociology department.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was various departments on campus that put on that program to basically show children who generally are less likely to attend college that they have the potential and they can be part of the STEM field.
Right. Because, and it was focused on Latinx children, too.
Right, yeah, exactly. Because
they pulled them from the West Side and que, like, meaning the Spanish word, like what?
Yeah. You know?
Like a sense of discovery.
Yeah, curiosity. Yeah, encouraging, embracing curiosity. Yeah.
Right. And so I was a counselor with that, and she basically was all like super fired up about it. But then, you know, things happen, and then eventually. Yeah. Anyways, I'm glad that like she's like that for way like more people than myself. You know what I'm saying? Like I would think that like, oh, she's only like this with me, so I should feel special. But no, she's a leader like amongst, you know, her peers and a mentor for everyone else, you know. And so you started off with cultural leadership with African Dunia, right, if I remember?
Yes.
And then, like, what other, like, how else did you get, like, what, so, how did you get involved with the other cultural organizations?
So while I was, actually, step back a bit.
Okay.
Before African Dunia, I also joined Peer Health Advocates.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
So I did, what was it called? Sexuality education.
Mm-hmm.
Comprehensive sexuality education, advocacy, and also, like, just a bunch of things to try and figure out, you know, what topic am I interested in. And I love public health. I absolutely, you know, I love it.
Yeah.
You know, there's just nothing better than making sure people are healthy and safe.
Yeah.
And it was a lifestyle commitment because there are a lot of requirements to be part of the peer health education program.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I thought, you know what, this is good. Mm-hmm. And then doing that.
It was the pole under there. It was my foot.
While I was doing that, I was part of African Dunia, and I realized, you know, is there a way to combine this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, can I do more programming? You know, how do I do more? And I think the turning point in my career here where I really, really decided, you know what, I really have to start doing more real change. Not that my advocacy wasn't real or my leadership in African Dunia wasn't real, but just expanding beyond the student sphere was when the African American Alliance had their demand process.
Yes. Yeah. And I'll never forget about that. I'm actually going to have Manny on an episode in the future, so they'll expand about that a little bit later.
And so after that process, I realized, you know, yes, I'm Malaysian. Yes, I may return back to my country once I'm done, but what can I do? Because I almost transferred out of John Carroll.
You did?
I almost did. Well, not only because of the AAA demands, but also because I was looking at other academic programs.
So it was at that time?
Yeah, it was just sophomore year was a mess.
It was a
But, you know, I was looking into it, and Salo and Dr. Vaquera, I'll never forget, they both asked me this exact same question. So what are you going to do about it?
Hmm.
You know? And I was like, oh, shit.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, like, oh, you know, I have to do something.
Right.
I can't just not, like, see something happen and pretend it didn't happen.
I feel like that's a lot of people's, like, moment, you know, like, to actually, like, whether they're going to break into, like, being a, like, a true leader or, like, just, you know, a leader on a label, you know, like, what are you going to do about it, you know? Are you going to rise to the occasion or are you just going to let it happen?
Right. You know? And so I decided, you know what, let me find other ways I can get involved.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked into it. I wanted to do more programming, and I did more, like, not just come and eat food, but more with, like, purpose.
Yeah.
And a couple of things actually fell through. So I was also sophomore year, what's it called? Why am I forgetting these? I just graduated yesterday. I was a peer mentor for the international students. And I was like, you know, how can I bring to light international student issues as well?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not just like 50 students on campus, you know, it's potentially hundreds in the future.
You know, and I feel like a lot of people don't even pay attention to that as much as they don't. Like, it took my cousin coming from El Salvador and living with me to know about just the beginning of a lot of right. issues that he's just going to end up probably facing yeah. too.
So, like, it starts, this is a tangent, but I'm going to go on it.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, with international students, because the soft landings program at Carroll is really, really nice
mm-hmm.
because we talk to students sometimes before they agree to come here.
Oh.
And, like, there was a student who was from Malaysia. She ended up transferring out. But I met up with her in Kuala Lumpur, KL. And we talked about, okay, what's life at John Carroll? What's life in the U.S. like?
Uh-huh.
Because it's different. It's very different. No matter how much we say we can be comfortable with it, there's always that one small thing that just causes your first, like, wave of culture shock.
Yeah.
And we talked about that. So that's the beginning part. And then we kind of, like, give them advice throughout the visa process. Like, hey, go in at least 2 months. Like, book your appointment 2 months in advance.
Yeah.
We can't give them, like, legal advice. Disclaimer, right. We don't do that.
Yeah.
But just, like, you know, was it tough for you? Because I feel so frustrated. You know, like, do I want to go through this ridiculously expensive process
right.
and time-consuming process to mm-hmm. come to the U.S.? And I tell them, well, you know, it's up to you. You are making this choice. You know, no one else is coming for your education but you.
Right.
Your parents can't force you because you're the one who has to live with this decision.
Yeah.
And then once they get accepted, once they get their visa and they're packing, we help them with that part because Cleveland weather is mm-hmm. just a thing of its, like, by itself.
Yeah.
Once we do that, we get them adjusted during orientation. But that's really where the school kind of expects them to be okay already because
mm-hmm.
they have a host parent. They have us, peer mentors, but they don't realize that there's also a need from the school. It's not just financial aid. It's not just faculty assistance.
Mm-hmm.
It's having storage over the summer, like on campus.
Mm-hmm.
Having, like, we will pack our stuff and literally just shove it in a room, all of us in one room in Campion when really? We're happy.
Uh-huh.
We don't need a lot. We really, really don't need a lot.
Hmm.
But we don't have summer house, like, housing, storage. Right. If I want to get Asian groceries, I have to go to the Cleveland Asian Market, which is North Miles Road, like 10 minutes
that's
from here.
That's kind of like downtown-ish, right?
No, that's the other one.
Oh, that's the other one. Yeah, okay, that's mm-hmm.
yeah, there are right. a couple in the area, but the closest one is about 10 minutes away.
Okay.
But there's no transportation to that area, so you need to take a mm-hmm. Lyft or an Uber or have a friend who can drive.
Yeah.
But a lot of, like, the international students, we can't drive. And even if we do drive, who's going to get a car for 4 years? Mm-hmm. What are you going to do with it? Like, we don't know how to lease things. You know, we often don't have credit scores. We don't have a lot of things that you need
right.
to do a lot of things that require movement, mobility here. So accessibility, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Getting a storage unit, if you can afford it, great. You know, but if you can't, what are you going to do?
Right.
And it's things like that. It's the details, you know, the devil is in the details.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. You have your mentor to help you. But, like, for me, I'm a student. I don't have a car. I don't have, I can't rent a U-Haul to move them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't drive.
Right.
I can't even ride a bike. Oh, uh-huh. gosh. So I'm going to learn how to do that over this year, my gap year. But, like, you know, things like that.
Yeah.
If you don't know the area, you don't have family in the area, it's very, very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
So, like, all of those issues, like, yeah. pertain, like, are obviously, you know, very unique to mm-hmm. international students.
Yeah.
But what are some issues, like, on campus that you and your peers face, you know, being international students?
Yeah. Ignorance is a big one.
Yeah.
Not just general ignorance, like, willful ignorance, like choosing to be ignorant about mm-hmm. different places. I joined African Dunia because I had friends who were from the African continent
mm-hmm.
and I realized I know so little about their countries. I know so little about their culture, their music, their food, their traditions.
Right.
And if I am their friend, the least I can do is learn about them.
Yeah.
You know? But they also made the effort to get to learn about me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was one day, so we do Country of the Week every week. And
this is an African Dunia?
Yes.
Okay.
And one time they were like, Amy, you're next week. Mm-hmm. You're on next week. And I was like, Malaysia is not in Africa. I don't know what you guys are doing. And they were like, no, but you're part of this organization. Mm-hmm. You know, even if Malaysia's not in Africa, we want to learn about you. So you get to do a presentation. I prepared the whole week for this presentation. Nice. I prepared more than my class presentations. And from like that experience was amazing.
Yeah.
Because
you ever ask yourself like why something like that is amazing though? Like is it because there's an expectation that you wouldn't expect people from other countries to ask about, hey, like what's going on in your country? Or like where does that come from, you know?
Because no one has asked.
Right.
Like in my 4 years here, I can count in my head the number of people who have spoken to me about my country.
Mm-hmm.
Because no one cares about Southeast Asia at Carroll, frankly.
Yeah.
You know, it was very, very, it is very, very unique for American universities to send people, if they are small, to send people to Southeast Asia.
Yeah.
Like, especially Malaysia and countries in that area. Because you learn about it. If you're rich enough, you can come, you know, stuff like that. Or they go to bigger schools.
Right.
But that was the reason I came. You know, it's because I met someone from John Carroll and I decided to go because I trusted her. Mm-hmm. I also visited the school and fell in love with it. But I made it a point to come and visit because the way she spoke about the school made me fall in love with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But when I'm here, no one knows where Malaysia is. Okay, maybe that's fine. I can live with that. But no one makes the point to learn where Malaysia is.
Right.
No one asks me, what's your favorite thing to do at home? You know? Mm-hmm. There are some questions where it's like kind of weird.
Yeah.
Where like the whole, you know, oh, your English is so good. And I'm like, you do know international students have a English like, requirement,
right?
Have
to
right?
know English to be like a student
admit
here.
It. Yeah, we have to take the TOEFL.
Yep.
It's not, you know.
And even here at John Carroll, like you have to like be like fluent, right?
Yes.
I think at community colleges, like you're allowed to take like ESL classes and all that. But at John Carroll, like that's not a thing.
You take your ESL classes before you get in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I kind of feel like, kind of feel bad. No one has asked you like what Malaysia, you know.
There have a lot of the people who ask me are international students or people who are genuinely interested in other countries.
Right.
And those are very few in number.
Right. Especially at this school.
Yeah. People assume I'm American because I kind of mask my voice. My accent isn't very strong. I was really, really lucky. My mom raised me so that I would be comfortable speaking English with a pretty neutral accent.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't want me to get teased or find it difficult to go to school. She gave me a very, like, neutral name, Amy.
Yeah.
You know, like, everyone can say that name, practically.
It's so crazy how, like, practically every culture, except, like, European cultures, of course, or, like, normative cultures, like, people, English cultures, parents do that, you know?
Yeah.
I remember, like, we went to the Usually Conference in Chicago.
Yeah.
And there was a whole workshop based on what you just said.
Yeah.
That parents name their kids, like, very normal names. Like, like Gabby, she was on the show a couple weeks ago, and that's an example. And then her sisters are another example of that. Like, very easy to pronounce, you can't get them wrong type of name. You know, and that's to prevent being bullied and discriminated at this country because everyone kind of knows that America is like that, you know?
Yeah.
On another note, like, what are you most excited about, like, going back home?
Oh, my God. So many things. I get to eat a lot of food. And Malaysia is such a diverse country.
Yeah.
Like, genuinely diverse country. We have cuisines, like, we become experts in different cuisines.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm so excited for the food. I'm excited to spend time with my mom, who's here for this week, and my brother. I really miss him. And so I'm glad I get to spend some time with him.
That's awesome.
What else am I excited for? I get to travel a lot more because it's just closer to so many other countries.
The surrounding countries, because I can't remember off the top. I know Malaysia's in Southeast Asia, right? But like surrounding countries, like what's around?
Singapore, Thailand, Cambodia, Indonesia, Vietnam, Philippines. You know, it's pretty close by.
Yeah.
And then Australia and New Zealand both have like their cheaper flights from Malaysia. There's the whole of Asia, Central Asia, South Asia that's open. Off season, I get to go to Europe.
Awesome.
Because they're just like, that's the beauty of a gap year.
Yeah.
You know, is that you can travel during the seasons where everyone's in school.
Right.
So I'm looking forward to that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So life in Malaysia, you know, like, obviously you've been here, what, for 4 years, right?
It's, yeah.
And you have you gone back to visit, like, mm-hmm. in between? Yeah, okay. So.
But it's different because the community I have depends on my mother. So her community is mine.
Mm-hmm.
And which is great because it's a wonderful community. I love her friends. And then my personal community is the one that I had from high school.
Yeah.
But in my 4 years, I've kind of lost touch with a lot of them. And I'm at a disadvantage because I've created connections here,
mm-hmm.
not at home.
Oh, okay.
And so I've lost that, like, 4 years of network, not just networking, but building friendships, building knowledge, building so many things because I've done it for this country,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's
like, different. Would you consider coming back in the future?
That's a good question.
I mean, I hate to ask that question, you know, because, like, post-graduation, like...
Right.
But,
so I'm looking at grad schools in the U.S., but also in the U.K.
Okay.
I would like to study Malaysia.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, trained in sociology.
Yeah,
I've been ruined for all other disciplines, I like to joke. Because, I mean, it's just, never mind. I'll go on a too long a tangent if I go down that road. But I would like to study, continue researching sociology,
mm-hmm.
sociological issues back at home. But if I come to the U.S., there are practically no departments, sociology departments that are focused on Southeast Asia.
Wow.
Well, there are some, but they're usually focused on other countries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Malaysia isn't a very significant country in terms of relationships with the U.S.
Right.
Yeah. And so...
So you feel like your intentions are, like, giving back to your society.
Yeah.
You know,
I do feel like I owe something.
Yeah.
Because... You know, I'm an other. You know, in Malaysia, we kind of check race boxes.
Hmm.
There's Malay, Chinese, Indian, and other. And I've always checked the other box. And I've kind of always wanted to, you know, understand what the experience of others are.
So tell me about why you're an other.
So my father's Japanese.
Okay.
And my mother's Indian, Malaysian Indian. And so she takes Indian, but I take other because of my father.
Mm.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. So it's interesting.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of cultures in your background. So you got Japanese, Malaysian, and
Indian.
South Indian.
Yeah, Tamilian. Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. That's a lot to take in. Mm-hmm. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
But so, like, I guess we could say, like, when you get back there, you're taking, what, a gap year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. And then what are you like, planning on doing then? Just kind of relaxing, or?
GRE and LSAT. In September, and applications to graduate schools over the fall semester, fall semester,
mm-hmm.
And then traveling, seeing my friends that I haven't seen in so long, and kind of,
sorry,
you know, oh, that's fine.
Totally ringtone. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, and trying to just think about what I want to do. Because I always get asked that question, what do you want to do? You know, mm-hmm. with your background, there's so many things you can do. What do you want to do?
That's always kind of an annoying question to me. Like, oh, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that it's us with the best of intentions. But it's a very stressful question.
Absolutely.
Because I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say I don't know, like, there are two typical responses. Very good. Like, oh, it's okay, you know. Take your time. It's mm-hmm. fine. You'll figure it out. I didn't know what I wanted to do, or, you know, something along those lines. But the flip side is, oh, are you sure you want to take a gap year? Like, are you going to be working full time? You know,
mm-hmm.
and like just general doubt on my ability to figure out what I want to do with my life. It's often an assumption that you are incompetent when you take a gap year rather than you are burnt out. And you need to take a gap year for yourself.
Right. And I feel like we're so conditioned, especially in mm-hmm. this society here in the United States. Mm-hmm. Like, you always got to keep it pushing no matter what, even if you can't keep
the ball
going.
Rolling.
Yeah. But it's like if you're burnt out, you're burnt out. And then mm-hmm. eventually you're going to be, you know, out of commission for a longer time. You know, you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and it kind of reminds me of back when we did that the mental health conversation.
Mm-hmm.
My gosh. Like, it was like. When I discovered, you know, that you know, I was diagnosed with ADHD, like, but being diagnosed at like 21 years old, it's like now I have so much context around like why I act the way that I do, you know, and college students, I feel like, need to, you know, do that so much more. Yeah. You know, it's just take care of yourself.
Mindfulness.
Yeah.
You know, the whole John Carroll cura personalis, care of the person.
Mm-hmm.
It seems very abstract, like, oh, you know, religious, spiritually care. But no, like, you have to take care of yourself.
Yeah.
And be mindful of your health. You know, we are not becoming sick for no reason. You know, there are things happening in our life, and we have to acknowledge that there's something going on.
Yeah.
Because if we don't do that, we're never going to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Or we're never going to at least stay good, you know?
You know, there's a bit of a question on my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've put in so much work here.
Yeah.
You know, like, we both held leadership positions here for not only just a year, but for an entire time we've been here, whether officially or unofficially.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where does that all let go? You ever sit down and think about that? Like, we put in so much work at school. And it's like, you know, but not in the classroom either. It's because we genuinely
I put a lot of work in my classroom. Okay, I don't know what you're talking about.
Right. Well, like, I'm saying with me, like maybe what I'm saying is not only in the classroom, but, like, outside of the classroom, like, with the culture orgs. And then just having conversations with, you know, our friends talking about, like, things that go on campus. You ever think about, like, is that actually going to stay here or, like, in the walls, or is that going to be going, like, forgotten?
This is the thing. You don't do – well, I'm not going to say you. I realize that I can't do things thinking about whether it's going to last. I do still think about it and I worry about it, but at the same time, when I am doing it, I'm doing it for the now.
Okay.
You know, I do it for the students who are there. Oh, I don't do it to – like, leave a brand, you know, which is, I understand, very contrary to your, your type of leadership. Like, for me, my style of leadership is, even if it's one person attending my group, and I've had programs where only one person attends, having a good conversation with that one person, making sure that they are comfortable, that they have the best experience possible.
Yeah.
That is what I'm going for, you know. My conversations, like late night conversations with my friends, that's our memories.
Right.
You know, I don't need it to, like, seep into the wall and haunt John Carroll for the rest of my life, you know. I want it to, I want someone to be able to think about, yeah, I had this conversation with Amy, you know, and she supported me, or, you know, she did something, you know, and I know she'll have my back.
Yeah.
And, like, that's what I want, you know? I've made mistakes while I was at Carroll.
Yeah.
And I've had a lot of seniors and juniors and peers, a lot of people, you know, correct me, tell me, hey, that's wrong.
Mm.
You know, tell me, hey, like, you don't, you shouldn't be doing this, or you should do this differently, or you're good, doing a good job, you know, affirming, like, my actions.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the leadership style I wanted to follow. Like, Salo, Dr. Vaquera, Dr. Nalandu, you know, all these professors, these staff and administrators who have worked without thanks, you know, they're the people I aspire to be like.
Right.
And my leadership is not dependent on whether or not they give me the award.
Right.
You know, I felt when I got it, honestly, it was nice to be recognized.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, like, oh, you know, I'm getting recognized for the work I've done. But at the same time, I was thinking, you know, I didn't do this alone.
Yeah.
None of it. Absolutely nothing I did alone.
Mm-hmm.
I always, always had people there supporting me throughout every single step. I never was alone. Even when I felt that I was alone, I never was. My mom was always there. Salo, Dr. Vaquera were always there. You know, my counselor was always there. You know, like, God bless Aaliyah. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
It's impossible to take credit for everything, you know, and
for me, I can't
for that.
For
me, I guess that's what you call true leadership. You know, it's like not one person does everything, obviously.
Yeah.
You know,
you can't. You physically, mentally, emotionally can't do everything.
I can say, you know, I can take a lot from what you just said, you know, like applying it to, I guess, my opinions on leadership.
Yeah.
You know, because you're right. I mean, everything you said is very contrary to what I believe, but mm-hmm. I totally get it. Like, I'm, yeah. I don't disagree with it at all. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's important, you know. But when it comes to leadership, there has to be different types of, you know, yeah. leadership styles, you know, for different types of people too, mm-hmm. you know. And I think when it comes to cultural orgs, it's pertinent to have that mindset. Like, if you have that one person only coming to your workshop,
yeah,
and take that as like, you know, for what it is, and mm-hmm. make the best of it,
making sure they feel included,
right?
Because I feel that we talk a lot about inclusion in mm-hmm. the sense of others including us, but we often forget that we also need to include others in our conversation.
Mm-hmm.
We can't silo ourselves, you know,
right?
And like, that's something I've just been noticing more frequently,
yeah.
especially since I've been getting ready to leave. You know, I realize, you know, whatever my positions are, I'm not sharing them with just the people I hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have to share them with everybody.
Yeah.
And so far, fingers crossed, knock on wood, but, you know, my leadership positions are all being handed down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you continue a legacy. And that's what you want.
Right.
You know, it's,
and
yeah.
That's the part that I relate with the most, mm-hmm. you know, is not so much... Like, I'm not saying that I don't, you know, if one person comes out,
yeah.
you know, it's a bad thing. I'm not going yeah. straight to that. But I guess when kind of thinking about what I've done here mm-hmm. is why I'm so concerned, I'm not saying you, but why
yeah.
I'm concerned about what I've done being remembered here is not necessarily for my own thing. Like, oh, Carlos did that.
Yeah.
It's because there was something wrong with campus at mm-hmm. that time. And whatever was done to fix it, I hope it's sustainable, that
yeah.
it can stay. And then so that problem doesn't rise again.
Mm-hmm.
It may be totally like irrational to think about that.
No.
And like in that way. But because, I mean, problems are going to pop up everywhere. But still, like something about like why an opportunity was available to certain students and not available to other students. Like,
yeah.
why is that? Let's fix that. And once
yeah.
it's fixed, it shouldn't go back to what it was
right.
again, you know? And so.
Shout out to history majors.
Why you say that?
Because that's what they do. They study history to make sure we don't repeat the mistakes.
Right.
Except we never read their papers or their books. So that's our issue on our end.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think that it is important to make sure people understand what went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that they should understand the context of the issue, not the individual's problem.
Right.
Like... institutionally, what should we be doing? What happened? Because everything is in the context at John Carroll of the institution.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is not, generally, I'm not saying not all the time. Generally, it's not an issue of the individual. It's a cultural issue.
Yes.
We're talking about the culture of the institution. We're
yep.
talking about the response of the institution.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking about, well, I can say this now that I've graduated. We're not talking about... like this one person in this one administrative office
yeah.
doing this one thing.
Right, right, right.
Because it's not just that one person who thinks that way, you know? It's a structure that supports them in their action.
Yeah.
If there was the structure didn't exist, they wouldn't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't feel brave enough or they wouldn't feel supported in their action to be able to do that.
Right.
To such a scale, oftentimes with the issues that we see.
The type of decision making that's
mm-hmm.
like normalized
exactly.
in this institution.
Yeah, it's a hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And that hierarchy is sustained by people. People choose to be in the hierarchy.
Yeah.
You know, when someone is unable to speak up for fear of getting fired, that's an institutional issue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't keep like... sometimes, you know, you can say, well, that person can still say something, but at what risk, you know?
Right.
We don't have a support system to make sure that person is safe
mm-hmm.
in their ability to speak. So,
and that's not even, you know, like, it's, you can see that here on
yeah.
campus, but that exists, you know,
even
everywhere. Everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, you're dealing with, you know, of course, international
systems
students.
Of power.
Even yeah. just international students, like, they mm-hmm. have to be careful of what they say and how they say it and all that,
mm-hmm.
or else, you know. In the extreme, like, you can get your status revoked.
Yeah.
You know, same thing goes for undocumented immigrants, people who are under DACA, people who are under
yeah.
TPS. Like, all of that can be taken away in a snap of a finger.
Yeah, just talking about that, like, I remember right after the 2016 elections,
uh-huh.
there were a lot of people who were like, you know, like, oh, you know, this is rubbish, you know, like, oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Like, I'm going to go protest. You
yeah.
know, I'm going to do all of these, like, what's it called? Like, I can't remember.
What do they do?
Like, you do something that's against the law, in like nonviolent.
Oh, yeah, you're talking about
civil disobedience.
Yeah, civil disobedience.
Yes, yep. Civil disobedience. That took a minute.
I was
going to
say civil discourse, but that's not the right word.
Civil disobedience. And I was thinking about it. I was like, well, my mom's not here to bail me out, you know?
Yeah.
I can't sit in prison because then my, if you don't attend class for a certain number of days, you lose your status.
Mm.
And I'll get deported. You know, the D right. word. And you can talk about all these things. You can talk about, like, you know, taking action.
Mm-hmm.
But this is your government. They don't care about, you know, me and my actions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and my rights. Because what is Malaysia going to do? Malaysia is a small country. You know, we have people all around the world. We can't fight with countries like the U.S. Mm-hmm. At least we couldn't, you know. Maybe one day that will change, and I hope it does.
Yeah.
Because when someone from a small country gets into trouble, people don't realize that, like when an American gets into trouble, their embassy will send someone out, there'll be a huge press release, you know, and all that stuff. But, you know, what can my country do, you know, in the face of a behemoth like the United States?
Right.
And so I must be careful of what I say and what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I still speak out. Like, that's not going to stop me.
Right.
And sometimes it's a bit of a problem because my mom gets worried.
Uh-huh.
And I understand why she does. Honestly, yeah. Like, I'm a very troublesome child. But but at the same time, like, a lot of activists here don't really, like, people brag, oh, I got arrested at this rally. And I'm like, good for you. Like, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
If you get, like, even on something very minor, let's say alcohol, right?
Mm-hmm.
If I get arrested for alcohol charges in this country and I actually get, like, charged with it, I can't come back to the U.S.
Like, even just charged, not even a judgment?
I guess if I'm found guilty.
Yeah, okay.
I think I have to check on the laws. Maybe I'm incorrect, you know?
Like,
double check before you, you know, always double check your sources.
Right.
But, you know, they ask you on the entry form, you know, have you ever been arrested for drug or alcohol charges,
okay,
right?
Okay, that would make sense,
and
yeah.
Most of the time, like, if you take yes, you're probably not going to be allowed into the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are so many repercussions for having a different, like, status,
right.
You know? They say we don't discriminate based on this, this, and this, but...
But they discriminate on this, and this.
Yeah, exactly. And so you have to be so careful. And, you know, people call me a stick in the mud, you know, you don't have any fun, you're always working, you're always this. And I'm like, I'm not trying to get deported here.
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to cause my mother stress. I'm not trying to, like, fix your country for you. Just to be frank, like, it is not my job to fix your country. I'm working on the issues I know about.
Right.
Because I cannot be held complicit. I don't want to not do anything about it.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, you have to work with me, you know. I can't fix all your problems for you.
Right.
And I have to refuse to fix your problems for you. How will you ever learn?
Right.
And the whole idea of understanding your history and understanding your context.
Mm-hmm.
Like, sometimes I talk to people and I'm like, why do I know more about your country than you do? This is ridiculous. Or I know more about your half of the globe, like Europe and South America and North America.
What are some of those things that you would say that you know more?
Like politics.
Okay.
Like what's happening
in
the news. And people say, oh, I don't read the news, you know?
Right.
And I'm like, I understand to a certain extent. Like, then the past 2 weeks, I have been checking it less.
Mm.
But you still have to know the major events that go on.
Yeah.
Especially during the elections. That was shocking.
It's kind of crazy how a lot of people just think, like, oh, well, mm-hmm. Yeah, this is happening.
Yeah.
And then just go about it.
Yeah. You know, I met a person at the film festival and, you know, I said, I disagree with people who chose to vote for a third party candidate or abstain from voting because they didn't want to choose the lesser of two evils. And I said, you know, in Malaysia, you're only allowed to vote when you're 21.
Mm.
I turned 21 April 7th. That was the day before was when the parliament disbanded. So that's the registration deadline.
Mm.
I would give my right, like, to vote.
Mm.
You know, that's my civic duty.
Yeah.
And for someone to abstain was like unimaginable for me. Mm-hmm. And then when the third party candidates came in, I was like, well, you do realize the margin's going to be extremely slim.
Yeah.
They said, they announced, the polls announced that it was going to be really, really slim.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you take that chance and risk it? And people told me, I have the right to, I have the right to vote for whoever I want. I agree, 100%. Third party candidates are important.
Yeah.
But with this particular election,
there was a lot of
the
risk.
The rights of way too many people were at stake.
Mm-hmm.
Because the rights of one was at stake, you know.
And that's the thing about being in the United States, and I'm sure it's similar in Malaysia because mm-hmm. of how diverse it is, but is the diversity. You know, there's so many different issues that mm-hmm. different people identify with, and they yeah. and a lot of people become single issue voters too.
Mm-hmm. That's really problematic.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And so. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. The issues with democracy, right?
Well,
but
yeah, that's a whole different hour-long conversation.
For sure. So I guess kind of wrapping up and all that, I just kind of have like two more questions. Mm-hmm. And so the first one is like, what would you remember most about your time here, you know, at Carroll?
Hanging out with my friends and eating.
Yeah.
That I'm going to remember. Just speaking, some of the moments I've spoken up,
mm-hmm.
you know, but mostly just hanging out with my friends, you know, those are the memories that I will really care about, you know, spending time in Salo's office talking about different issues,
mm-hmm.
you know, spending time with Dr. Vakira talking about different issues, like just sitting down and talking to people. That's what I'll remember.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to remember the exams. I'm not going to remember the papers, the, I don't know, like the student union meeting, sorry. But I'm just, you know, that's just not something that I think I will remember.
You know, Salo kind of told me something important. You know, mm-hmm. he tells me this almost every time, you know, I talk with him. But, you know, what you remember about people is how they make you feel, you know, in a certain moment in time.
Isn't that a quote?
I guess. I don't know. But he told me this all the time.
Yeah, Devante told it to me, but he read it somewhere. You know, when you interact with people, they're not going to remember what you did for them, but they're going to remember what you made them feel.
Yes, right. Yeah. That's exactly what he tells me all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I probably look up that up. I don't know. I didn't think about
it. It's a nice quote. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I guess the last thing is, like, what is something that you would want to let the world know? You know, I ask this for everybody mm-hmm. that comes onto the show.
Yeah.
You know, like, what's something that's been on your mind? And, you know, I think it's probably more relevant in your case because, I mean, you're leaving, you know, you're going back home. You know, like, what's something that you feel like you would want to leave this country? You know, like, what do you want to say, you know, to the people that may be listening?
Even if it's one person going through something, learn what that one thing is, like what that one person is going through, because changing that one person's life isn't something that's beneath mm-hmm. us. It's they are still a person, and their memory must still remain with us, you know. Mm-hmm. How do I phrase this? Issues come up, you know, big issues. Life comes up, you know, life throws us a curveball or whatever. But we cannot forget that while we are, it goes in two directions. We cannot forget that while we're dealing with all our issues, that there are other issues out there for mm-hmm. us to deal with. But while we're dealing with everything, we must always remember that we can only continue to deal with things as we take care of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that those two things are not mutually exclusive. You know, taking care of yourself involves taking care of others.
Mm-hmm.
Because not only can you not pour from an empty cup, but you also cannot pour if there are no cups, you know, to fill.
Yeah.
You know, and making sure that other people have, like, full cups, using this, you know, analogy, like making sure other people have full cups so you don't have to pour all the time
mm-hmm.
is also something that's important. Empathy.
Yeah.
You know, just listen to people. see how they are. Check in with them.
Right.
That's, you know what? That's it. Check in with people. You know, visit your professors. Ask them how they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
They're human. You know,
right.
They have problems, like way big problems sometimes than what we have.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like check in with your friends. You never know when someone just needs a hug,
mm-hmm.
or a hello, or a genuine how are you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. All right. Well, good luck to everything that you have going for you.
Thank you.
You know, and of course your flight home too. You know,
that's going to be quite a journey.
How many hours is that actually? Do you know?
The shortest journey from Cleveland to Kuala Lumpur is 27 hours.
Wow.
But tomorrow, I think it's about 40 some hours,
uh-huh.
because we have a 15-hour layover in Tokyo.
Okay.
So it's going to be
It's rough. Only 15 hours.
Oh, only 15 hours. Yeah. That's the total of some people's like whole journey.
Yeah. Gotcha. Well, thank you for everything that you've done, you know, here at Carroll. You know, mm-hmm. I'll never forget you, you know, and of course, you know, we'll keep in touch and all that. But thanks for coming onto the show. I'm sure a lot of people would love to hear, you know, that what you have to say. You said some pretty beautiful things today.
Thank you.
Okay.
I hope so. Please forgive me for the things I have said.
All right, everybody. Go ahead and tune in next time after you listen to this episode. And yeah, thanks for listening. All right. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.